All right. Hello, everyone. This is going to be a Without Reform sub-conversations. We may be calling it Typologies. We may be calling it Nathan Systems that is too long to have a name and complicated, but we want to help people with this system. So we'll find out. I'm Joel Meyer.
Like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna be interviewing my good friend Nathan on his system, on his personality intrigue. What would you give as a tagline for what your system is, really?
That's a great question, and that I don't have an answer to.
Great. I think that's fair. You are one of the deeper thinkers I know, and you have gone down a hole on this for how many years now?
About 5 years now, a little over.
Okay. And you had kind of a side project before that was sort of tangentially involved in this?
I was working on some studying in a bunch of different topics for about 5 years before that, and then jumped into this stuff in addition to that stuff for the last five.
Yeah. So you've been doing doctorate level thesis work on this type of stuff for almost 10 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's been self-directed. There hasn't been a lot of programs you're doing. You're using other people's research and all that, but you're mainly focused and directed on sort of where things are driving you and what you're finding to go chase.
Correct. Yep. The way that I like to frame it is that I was given a puzzle and I wasn't given any of the pieces, and I've had to make them as I've gone along, and I've been putting it together, and we're getting somewhere, but it's not by any means done.
Okay. So is this like a normal part of your life before these 10 years where you had puzzles you always kind of worked on? Like, what was your background and stuff before this?
Before this? Well, so I was homeschooled and had a bunch of projects that I was working on then, much smaller and less grandiose than this. After high school, I think I graduated high school, I started worked, a couple of jobs here and there, had a bunch of life experience. And then after a number of different things happened, I kind of ended up jumping into this stint of studying.
Okay. So a little of this, a little of that, ended up somewhere.
Yep.
So walk me through that first process of the puzzle. When did you realize, you know, this is something you felt like you were supposed to figure out?
Well, I think it started, roughly 10 years ago. I had been working a job and wasn't feeling a whole lot of peace about being there. Wasn't feeling a whole lot of contentment or like I was where I needed to be. And so I had been spending a bunch of time praying about what I needed to do or where I needed to go. And I believe that God told me, I want you to go home and I want you to sit and I want you to wait. And so I was a little bit concerned about it. I expressed some concern and God said, nope, just do it.
Yep.
And so I went home and I sat and I waited. And something about me is that I don't sit very well. And by that, I mean, I don't sit and do nothing very well.
Right.
And so if I'm going to sit, I'm going to be working on something. And I started pursuing a couple of interests. Those kind of grew into more and more and more and more. And eventually, I feel like I was handed bits and pieces as I needed them as I went. And so none of this, something I like to say is that none of this was my idea. None of this is my doing even. Everything that I have has been handed to me in this process. And all the bits and pieces that I have accumulated, very little of it is my work, but I think that what's interesting is the way in which I have connected the bits and pieces. And I think that's what I've needed to do the past 10 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You have a lot of things that have your fingerprints on them, even if they're not what you created, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And I like that. Just sort of sidebar here. I want to at some point, I don't think tonight is the night, but I do want to get into this concept of like, God told me to do this, so I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And fine.
Yeah.
And just sort of that, you're said this on an episode, I don't know what's going to get released first, but you are one of the few people I know that are like, should I do that? What does God think? God said no, I gotta wait.
Mm-hmm.
And just I think through the process that has shown through of just like, hey, I'm not actively doing this. I'm being passive in an active way,
mm-hmm.
where I'm trying to figure out what obedience is in this spot,
mm-hmm.
and doing what I feel like is right in a way that, you know, might look a little odd, might look weird.
Yep.
And so at some point we'll get into that a little more, but just want to shout you out. So why the switch from the first 5 years to the deeper focus in the last five?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would actually say it's not a switch. It was a building upon. I think that I needed to have done the first 5 years of study in order to have the foundation for the last, for the second half, for the second five years.
Yeah.
A lot of the first 5 years was based in learning about nature and farming and ecology and biology and even some anthropology and human history and essentially how we as humans have interacted with nature and who and what nature is and how those things have progressed over time was kind of the first 5 years of study. I think that that gave me a foundation to base the second 5 years on, which is essentially a look into who we are as humans, particularly individuals, and how that looks growing out from the individual to the greater picture of things. And what that looks like, not only in groups or not only in the individual, but also in groups.
Okay.
And so I think it was a building from one to the other.
So I think the simplest way to sum up your first 5 years of work is one time you told me about your take on the curse in the Garden of Eden. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Maybe you have to remind me
How we, like, you basically viewed it as God telling us we were going to toil, but the curse was that we were going to try to undo the harmony that God had given to nature. And since we viewed ourselves as creators, we were going to meddle in something we didn't understand in a way that was going to take away the symbiotic relationships of all the different plants and all the different creatures together.
I must be smart or something. I don't remember saying that.
Well, all right. So this has been a Without Reform conversation. No, not trying to put words in your mouth or anything. But yeah, just that to me is sort of the synopsis of what your first 5 years of work was really understanding what a puzzle was, basically, and how perfectly things could fit together if you were willing to pay attention and leave stuff alone and in the right ways and prune where you would need to, but not just assume we know the right way.
Yeah,
and so things need to look this way, but to look at things more as a how, what if we observed and watched different things and were sort of back to that passive while being active thing.
Yeah, I think that maybe something I can share that is would be helpful here is the way I understand things to have happened, obviously not having been there, but the way I understand things to have happened at the fall was when the fall happened, when sin entered the world, we as humans became disconnected from the creator and from who we were created to be. And from that comes the curse of sin. And sin in this, by my definition, being any action that comes out of that disconnection from the creator or who we were meant to be.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the studying that I did in those first 5 years was essentially learning to redefine in my own mind what nature is and how it works, you know, the ideal order of nature and how it was set up initially and how disconnected human interaction with it has caused it to get to the point where it is now. And also potentially how human interaction could benefit it moving forward. Because I think that we as humans are an essential part of nature. I think that we have a role to play. And if we don't play our role, nature suffers. Nature as a whole suffers. And so I think that that interaction is really interesting. And the first 5 years of study were, in my mind, what is nature? And the second half were who are we as humans?
Yep.
You know, what is disconnected? What is connected? What is real and what is not? What is beneficial versus not beneficial? And so the two, that's another, I think another aspect of how the two build on each other is you need one and you need the other. You can't have either one of them separate. You know, because we are part of creation and we must be a part of creation and interact with nature itself. So I think that maybe that's what you're talking about when you're talking about what I was sharing with you before.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's a perfect segue into sort of how you've created the system and what you were looking for. And, you know, I think you have just laser focused in kind of on each step as you've come down. And maybe you can view it as building a tower upwards where, you know, as you get higher, you don't need as much ground space, but you are going somewhere. And so I think what has marked my experience watching you go through all this is just sort of each time you've unlocked a new level, it's just like you have pulled everything along with you the whole way through. You aren't forgetting things that have come before. You're letting those things inform as you move along.
Yeah.
And so one of the things experts typically do is as they gain more knowledge, it's sort of the one of the episodes we have is on heritage, where our past narrows our focus and it brings us to a certain place where other things can't be true. I think you've had that, but you've brought along enough knowledge and enough things with you where you're making informed decisions out of knowledge, not out of fear.
Yeah.
And so that's been really cool to watch.
And maybe even to expand on that thought, knowledge out of fear versus fear, maybe out of, I would call it connection versus the disconnection.
Yep. And I like that you're going to continually keep bringing these conversations back to that concept. So keep going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe I'll start with a little bit about what the system is and what it isn't. I think that one of the things as I first started to get into this, was facing the idea that that we're disconnected from who we were created to be. I attribute that to the effect of sin in the world. And so what does that mean moving forward? Was kind of my question and what is in pursuit there. Yeah. And so that turned into qualifying the ways to move forward as the work to be done within this system. And that reconnecting as the way forward in that. That's going to be something that I'll be referring back to quite a bit, I think, as I talk about, you know, the different aspects and the different things about how this works. The system itself is designed to be used as a tool for self-examination. And so while I certainly am able to help point out things that I see, obviously I can't enter into someone else's life experience.
Yep.
And so it's not, I don't consider it to be my job to necessarily do assessments or do even counseling on helping someone trying to figure out what their type is, because I view it more as a system of self-examination. I'm here, I think that my job in disseminating this is more to initially help you figure out like kind of where you fall within the system. And then from that point, I can say, here are the things to look at within yourself. And that's where the work actually starts, I think. And so it's not so much a system of diagnosis and saying like, this is your type, this is what you are, this is where you fall in this. It's more of a system of here are the things, take a look at like where you're at and, you know, where you're moving, because the system allows for quite a bit of dynamic movement as well. Because everything is constantly changing, because everyone's constantly going through things and life circumstances are changing and perspectives are changing. And as we grow and learn, you know, the way we think about things changes and all that. And so it's designed specifically to be dynamic and a way to self-examine. I also think that it's best disseminated. It's best passed on to people through direct exposure.
Yeah.
Through shared experience. And so that I think it's well-founded in the concept of discipleship.
Yeah.
Because it's not a, you know, here's a book, here's a list of things, here's whatever, like go figure it out yourself. It's no, let's go do stuff and then let's talk about it. And so I think that it's not, a lot of people have asked me if I'm going to write a book on it. And I don't know that I'm ever going to write a book on it, although I may write things down and codify a little bit of it. I don't think that necessarily writing a book on it is the best way to pass it on. I feel like as an oral tradition or as an experiential training, even, I feel like that's a better way to pass it on. And that allows for the transmission between people who tend to think alike and understand the way that they talk. Whereas if you were to have two people in the same room, you know, one person trying to pass it on to someone else who doesn't understand the world the same way that the teacher does, you got problems, you know? And so having that as a dynamic tradition, as a dynamic way of communicating information, even, or communicating experience, you have options.
Yeah, you're not viewing the system as an A, B, C. Like, if you do this, then this will happen and it's going to go great and you're going to have an idea. And no, It is sort of that passive active thing where it sort of gauges how you are responding to things as they happen to you. And so it's not a way to gauge how you are acting upon things. It's a lot of how are you reacting to that disconnection? How are you moving forward in that disconnection to become more connected? And so I think you're, from what I know of it, I'm no expert on it, obviously, but as we've talked about it over the years, it does need that relationship tilt. It does need people to be a part of that.
Yep. It's also not incredibly rigidly defined,
right,
which is important for it to be able to work for more than just, you know, a small grouping of people. As we talk about it more, I often struggle to find what it is because I don't really have definitions of what it is, because I think it becomes what it needs to be while you're using it.
Yeah. And my understanding is it's more a lifestyle than it is like a fix it, catch all type system.
Yeah.
Where you have to truly be ingrained in the thought process to understand where you're being pushed, how you're responding. We hadn't seen each other in a while and you monologued at me for 45 minutes about stuff. And you were like, I think I've just unlocked this. And that's, that's really is sort of how this goes. It isn't, hey, it's going to be easy. Do these three things.
Yep.
You really got to dig in and understand and know.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm excited about conversations like this, where we can talk it out and show other people what's going on. And if nothing else, encourage people that they can also do a deep dive into whatever for 10 years and it can still be good. So we've spent, I don't know, a half hour, 20 minutes talking about sort of how you got to the system, how we view the system being implemented. Can you take us into what is the system? Why is the system? What are the components? You've been using other people's research. What are the core tenets you've been putting into this?
So, excuse me. A lot of what I put into it has been borrowed from other systems. I initially started out studying the Enneagram and found a lot of use in that, and then kind of moved into Myers-Briggs and kind of expanded out from there a bunch. And as I studied the two systems, I found a lot of usefulness in them, but there were also a lot of things that didn't quite seem to make sense about either things that other people were attributing to the systems or ways in which the systems were being used. It felt to me like people kind of picked a system and then got invested into it.
Yep.
And they were trying to use it to understand everything. And to me, the two systems didn't really address everything. And I don't remember exactly when this happened, but I remember having a thought come to me one day of these systems were created by different people who had different perspectives of reality. And so they're talking like all the things that are being talked about and that have been helpful and useful are true and real. They're just not the same or not prioritized for everyone.
Right.
And so as I was looking at that, because I started in the Enneagram, probably also because it's a whole system, I initially set up the framework of the head, heart, and gut as the primary centers of knowing within us as humans. So my system, the way, I wish I had graphics for this, but I don't have any of that yet.
We can do show notes. Just draw them up.
Yep. If I had any artistic ability, it would have been done already. But
if only you knew someone that, like, I don't know, did cross stitch kits and some other stuff.
And so to communicate kind of my thought as far as what a graphic looks like, if you imagine an equilateral triangle and three circles at each of the vertices that are just small enough that they're not touching each other. This is kind of, and so the triangle has one point facing up, you know, and then two points parallel to the floor at the bottom, and a circle at each point centered on each point. Yep, basically.
Okay. That at least means you're communicating it enough where people can visualize if I can do it.
So this is how I envision this system being represented graphically. So within each of the circles is represented one of the primary centers of knowing within us as humans. The top circle is representative of the gut center, which is the center of motivation or instinct. It relates to the why behind the things that we do.
Okay.
Going down and to the left, you have the head center. The head center is the center of cognition, and it addresses the how of the things that we do. And then moving to the right, you have the heart center, which is the image and the emotion center, and that addresses what we do as humans.
Okay.
So this is the basic foundation of graphically how this system is set up. So with each of the centers, I have a typological system that I've learned or am learning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning, still learning all of them, I think. But
so modest.
It's one of those things where the more I learn, the more I realize I still have to learn.
Dunning-Kruger.
Yeah, because there's a lot out there.
Yeah.
But with the gut center, I have assigned the Enneagram. The head center, I've assigned not necessarily the Myers-Briggs. I tend to use more of Carl Jung's cognitive functions, which for those who don't know, that's what the Myers-Briggs was based out of. Interestingly enough, I have a theory that the Myers-Briggs is actually a heart-centered approach to a cognitive system, which we can talk about later.
Yeah,
because
let's get down on Carl Jung. I'm all good.
Because the Myers-Briggs is a system based in archetypes,
okay,
which is essentially an image of a person. And image is the realm of the heart center. So that's an interesting rabbit trail that I went on one day of, you know, and I'm blanking on their full names, but were the creators of the Myers-Briggs system heart types, or was one of them a heart type approaching the cognitive system through their perspective?
Do you want me to Google them?
Sure, if you want.
It's the internet.
I mean, obviously,
if only we had a...
I know. Obviously, I know their last names, but I can't remember their first names. Yep.
Isabel Briggs Myers.
There you go. There was...
Co-created with Catherine Cook Briggs.
Yep.
Huh. Sisters or something, maybe?
Mother, daughter-in-law, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Mother and daughter. Look at that.
Is it mother and daughter? Okay.
That's just what a quick overlook. No more.
Okay.
It's the start of a New York Times article. Keep going. You're doing great.
Okay. Within the head center, I like to use Carl Jung's cognitive functions, and we can talk about that in a bit. And then within the heart center, because it's the center of image, I like to use astrological typology, because it's very much based in archetypes and the image of how we present ourselves to ourselves and to the world, you know, internal, external presentation of ourselves. So that's the basis of the system itself. And a lot of my work in this has been, it's been really interesting learning about the different systems, but also learning to assign different qualities and different aspects of reality to the different systems. And that's been a lot of the work that I've been doing in this time. And so I don't know if you want to jump into, maybe I'll throw something in here quick about, I started with the Enneagram and moved from that into cognitive functions. And I've just started learning about astrological typology. I've been studying it for probably the past 6 months, but I really only have a month's worth of actual studying in it. So that's going to be one.
Where's Mercury at right now, bro? Is it in retrograde? It's
over there somewhere. I don't know.
So I think, I think some people are going to hear astrology and just kind of go, all right, blah, blah. What do you mean when you're talking about astrological, like archetypes and other things like that? How are you viewing it as when people are born, or are you viewing it as like certain personality types that go along with the different symbols?
Mm-hmm. So I like to use, I think it's called tropical astrology, which is what most people are familiar with here in the West, at least. There are other systems that I'm only vaguely familiar with and haven't done a whole lot of looking into yet, but that's the system I like to use, or at least the one that I found most helpful and relevant.
Okay.
And so within that system, it is based on birth date. Within that system, when you are born, there are signs associated with the positions of planets in the sky. And so there's a lot here that I'm not going to be able to unpack in detail because I don't know it very well yet.
All good.
But
just want to know if you're uniting with all white girls everywhere or if you're advocating for something different.
Mm-hmm. So within when you are born, based on the positions of planets in the sky, there are signs associated to different aspects of who you are and different aspects of your life path, which is another reason I like to use this for the Image Center, is because it does talk a lot about your path in life and how you present yourself and who you're going to be and how, like, what actions you take is something that a lot of people will talk about in the realm of horoscopes. I tend to, and this is a personal thing for me, I tend to not rely too much on horoscopes because I feel as though connection to the creator is a little more reliable.
You're using this as descriptive, not prescriptive.
If I understand how you're using the terms, yes.
Like you're not saying because you were born now, this is what's going to happen to you today.
Yeah.
You're saying more, these are probably going to be some core themes that go along with who you are.
Yep. Yeah. And using it as a tool to say, you know, even horoscopes as a tool to say, hey, here's something you should be looking at. You know, it's not, here's what you need to do today. It's, hey, here's something maybe you should be thinking about today. You know, and then you can go into considering, is this relevant? Is this something I need to be thinking about? Is this something I need to be praying about? Is this something, you know, that I need to have my focus on? Because I do think, in my limited experience, I have seen the usefulness of using horoscopes as a way to bring awareness to things in my life that I need to be thinking about.
Sure.
Because for me personally, because I prioritize, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, because I prioritize my heart center last, within my system, everyone has all three centers and we prioritize them in a certain order.
Yep.
So because I prioritize my heart center last, I don't have as much of an attachment to the things of the heart as other people potentially can. And so I have a little bit more difficult time working within the heart center things. And so learning about horoscopes and learning about how they can inform has been an interesting journey for me because it's very much outside of the realm of what I'm prone to focus on. So, and that's a whole conversation we could have. It's probably a whole podcast on its own, but.
Oh, we're going to have more of these. Don't worry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be short on time in a chronological sense, perhaps in an episodic sense.
Yep.
Okay. So what center do you prioritize? You said your heart was kind of your last one. What's the first one for you?
So I prioritize, and this may be something, let me back up a bit. I think maybe a good place to start with all this is more in the realm of cognition.
Okay.
Because within my system, cognition is how we communicate verbally and receive verbal communication. It is cognitive processes, again, within my system that dictates, and this is based on Carl Jung's work, how we perceive and how we judge, you know, taking in information and making decisions about things. And there's a lot to that that I won't be able to get into the details of right now. But for those who don't know, and you can look this up, there's flow charts online and stuff. It's super easy to find. But Carl Jung's cognitive functions are essentially based on the idea that our brain does two things. It either perceives or judges. Perception is the taking in of information, and judging is the decision-making process. I like to view it as sort of like an in and an out.
Okay.
Perception being the in and judging being the out. Within perception, there are two ways in which our brain does that. Either we perceive through sensing, which is taking direct input from our senses, or we perceive through intuition. Intuition being difficult to define, but essentially the observation of patterns and the connecting of one thing to another. Not necessarily a direct reliance on the senses, although intuition does take information from the senses.
Yeah.
It is an organization of that information into patterns and connection. That's always intuition is always a difficult one to describe because it's so abstract.
You got to intuit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so those are the two methods of perception within the system. And there are two methods of judging or decision-making. And those are through thinking or feeling. Thinking being a very rational and progressive process, and feeling being values-based. And so you have four ways or four things that our brain does. And each of those can either be directed inwardly or outwardly. And within his system, there were some terms that he used originally. And then now most people settle on using the terms introverted and extroverted.
Okay.
And so you can do each of these four things in two ways, you know, according to two attitudes, either the introverted attitude or extroverted attitude. So all those things combined give you, and this is how I like to use the system, it give you 8 cognitive functions.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone has the potential for all eight cognitive functions, but we prioritize them in a particular order that gives a general profile or archetype that you can classify people into broadly and generally. The thing I like about taking a step back for a second, the thing I like about all the systems that I've picked to represent each of the centers is they all give a growth path or a potential way forward. There are a lot of typological systems out there that are used for either assessment or research or diagnosis or, you know, something like that. But what these systems do within my system is they're set up and they're used in a way that provides a way forward. Mm. And so it's not just, like I said earlier, I think it's not just diagnosis. It's not just you are this. It is, here's kind of where I think you are. And if you are here, here's how you can move forward. You know, here's the things that you can focus on to work on developing and work on expanding into and learning about and, you know, other ways and new ways of seeing essentially for you as the individual.
Yeah, having that connection being the focus is we're trying to reconnect to something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we start, and this is how we get somewhere better.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think it also sets up a framework for you to refer to when you're trying to understand where someone else is coming from.
Right.
You know, because I don't believe that any of us are big enough to embody all of reality within ourselves. I think that each of us have specific giftings and specific focuses that we prioritize and that we're gifted in.
Yeah.
And I think something that my system does well is that it gives a frame of reference for understanding what your gifts are and what they are not, you know, and where other people can do things better than you can.
Yeah.
So going back to cognitive functions, everyone has at least the potential. And I think that I would argue that everyone has all 8 functions, and we prioritize them in a particular order. And the top four. So the first function I should start at is the function that we prioritize most and that we're most focused on in life. And they are listed in descending order of prioritization.
Yeah.
The top four are generally refer for people that use the system. They generally refer to them as the conscious functions. And the bottom four are referred to as the unconscious function. And the way that the functions are stacked, there's a particular order to it, so that in the top four, you have 2 perceiving functions and 2 judging functions. And none of the top four functions will ever be from the same grouping. And so if you, for your perceiving functions, you will always have a sensing function and an intuitive function in your top four.
Yep.
And the sensing and intuitive functions will be the opposite attitudes of each other. So if you have extroverted sensing, you will have introverted intuition. And same with the judging functions. If you have, you'll always have one thinking, one feeling, and one will be extroverted, the other will be introverted.
And so do you view that introverted, extroverted in this sense with the cognitive functions as sort of a when you're within yourself versus when you're without yourself? Or, you know, you kind of said they changed terms through the years. So what do you view that introvert, extrovert as?
So the way I use those terms is whether or not that function is focused on the internal world or external world.
Okay.
And so we could take sensing, for instance, introverted sensing versus extroverted sensing. They are very different because introverted sensing is focused more on a person's sensory experience of a thing. Therefore, it is more based in the past. Whereas extroverted sensing, because it's focused on the external world, can only be based in the present, because there is no other external world to be focused on. You cannot focus on the external world in the past, because then you're focused on your experience of the past.
Okay.
And so extroverted sensing is a lot more objective. You know, it looks at things the way that they are, not so much the way that they were experienced, or the realm of introverted sensing. And so that's how I use introverted, extroverted.
Okay.
In the system.
Keep going. Yep.
Maybe I'll keep going into the other functions and kind of how they differ from each other, since I'm on a roll there anyway.
Yeah, roll tide.
Well, okay.
Not Alabama, obviously, just as a general sense.
Okay. Introverted intuition versus extroverted intuition. Because intuition is a really interesting function and sometimes difficult to describe, the best way that I've heard the difference between the two talked about is that introverted intuition is more of a narrowing down, trying to find the core of what a thing is. You start with a bunch of information, you start with a lot of references and knowledge and stuff, and you essentially look at it all and find the patterns between it and figure out.
Would that be what you're doing with this system?
Maybe. Maybe that's the function that I use pretty high up.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Sure.
And so you start out with a lot of information and you find the connections and the patterns between it, and you essentially narrow it down to within the scope of what I'm looking at, what is actually happening here at the very core.
Yeah.
And it's this constant, you know, dividing and narrowing down and trying to find, you know, the smallest nugget of truth that you can. And maybe truth isn't the right word to use there, but the smallest nugget of what is real, maybe.
Yeah. Smallest dose of reality.
Yeah. Something like that.
It's your quark.
Whereas extroverted intuition is more focused. It kind of does the opposite. It starts with a bunch of information and it takes it and it expands it out, you know, like a fractal essentially, and saying, you know, based on this information that I have, what are all the things that could potentially come to be as a result?
And that's me.
Yeah. And so that's the difference between those two cognitive functions.
Yeah.
Within the judging tree, you have introverted versus extroverted thinking. We'll start at introverted thinking. It's more focused on internal framework of rationale and logic.
Okay.
And so people that tend to use introverted thinking high will tend to be more focused on their own thought processes and the thought processes of others. And so you get a lot of critiquing of basically like how you think. And so you'll hear a lot of,
huh? This is getting accusatory, Nathan. I don't know, bro.
I mean, I think that an interesting side note, I think, is that when you start to find where you fall within the system, it starts to get a little uncomfortable. You know, I've heard that from a lot of people. That was my experience. Like, as you start to see the things about yourself that you are disconnected from, it's uncomfortable, certainly at first.
Well, we all like to think we're unique and we don't really belong anywhere specifically. And then someone comes along and says, well, there's eight things and you're one of the eight and you're four of the eight majorly. And there's one up there that's basically what you're always going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, don't be rude. I'm way more complex than, oh no, am I not more? That's all I, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because using these ideas as a core, it can extroverted intuition expand into many different expressions.
Yeah.
You know, and so like the expressions are different. And for someone who just looks at either the heart through the heart center, you know, just seeing the image of a person, or for someone who looks at just the sensory on the surface, they're going to be more focused on the expression of, you know, who a person is. Yeah. But I think that if you cut that back, you know, because there's a lot of things like life experience and cultural experience and social experience, like all these things can make a person express in many different ways. Yeah. But when you cut that back, it ends up being at their core, very similar processes.
Yep.
You know, within people and, you know, the groupings of people and things like that. So jumping back into thinking.
Yes.
Introverted thinking tends to be more critiquing of processes and ways of understanding and things like that. Whereas extroverted thinking tends to be a little bit more critical of external order, because the thinking function is more focused on logical and rational order. When you extrovert that, it tends to be more focused on things like processes and external organization and the ordering of things for a particular goal. And maybe not even for a particular goal, but just the ordering of things. And so that function is influenced by the other functions.
You put that as like the internal introverted view is like critiquing the blueprints and the external one is like critiquing kind of how everything's decorated once it's put together?
Almost. I would say that critiquing the blueprints is kind of somewhere in between the two.
Okay.
Introverted thinking is going to be more focused on critiquing why you made the blueprints this way
Okay.
Extroverted thinking is going to be more critical of why the blueprints, whether or not the blueprints are going to be helpful in actually making the thing.
Okay.
And so it's in the introverted aspect is a critiquing of the thought process behind the blueprint. Extroverted thinking is a critiquing of the blueprint itself.
Sure. Sorry. Just as we're getting very ethereal here as we're going through, trying to pin it down to a little something every go along.
Yeah. No, that's helpful. So that's thinking. And then the last one is feeling. And so because it's values based, introverted feeling tends to be more focused on one's own personal valuation of things. And extroverted feeling is more based on group valuation of things, because the introverted function or aspect of that function is about me and what do I value. The extroverted function is about what is valued externally.
Yeah.
And so that could be, between two people in a relationship, that could be within a group of any size. The one is focused more on self and the other is focused more on other.
Yep.
So those are the eight cognitive functions in a nutshell. And it gets really interesting when you look at them within a stack and how they interact with each other and the interplay between them. There are attributes associated to each of the eight positions in the function stack that, and there's some debate on all this, but within my system, the position in the stack that a particular function is in will dictate how you use that function in correlation to the other functions.
So say more about that as an example.
So the first function is going to be the function that you use the most. You're going to tend to not really notice when you're using it or that you use it because it's so second nature. And the way that the functions are arranged in the stack, that's going to be either a perceiving or judging function. And the way that I use this for growth is your second function is going to be a function that you learn to grow into to balance your first.
Okay.
And so the second function will actually also be the opposite grouping of the first function. So if you have a perceiving function first, you'll have a judging function second, and it will be the opposite attitude of your first function. So if your first is introverted, your second will be extroverted. And so it has that balancing effect.
You're going to flip flop as you go down.
Yep. And then your third function is going to be the same grouping as your second function. So if your second function is a judging function, your third function will also be a judging function, but it will be the opposite attitude of your second function. And so we could look at, I'll just pick an example of one of the types. If someone, say, leads with introverted sensing, and then they have extroverted thinking second, they will have introverted feeling third, and then extroverted intuition fourth. And there's shorthand for all this that I may get into later, because it's much easier than saying intuition over and over and over again.
Yeah. And so is that always true? Is it 90% of the time true? What's sort of your take on how correct that is?
Mm-hmm. My take on that is it doesn't matter how true it is.
Okay.
It only matters whether it's useful.
Right.
Which is it's a very extroverted thinking way of looking at it versus introverted thinking, because it doesn't matter about, I'm not addressing the internal processes behind determining whether or not it is true. I'm addressing the external processes of, is it useful?
Yeah. And I think you said it sort of before, but I think what's helpful through this whole process is just realizing someone who thinks completely opposite of you isn't wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just wired different.
Mm-hmm. And they're actually caring for a part of reality that you can't care for.
Correct. There's value to each different separate section of it. It's not that one is better than the other, or we need to get people to be this way so that we can get something done.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, there is a new way to connect in each of those subsets that we need for the harmony of nature, of humans, of relationships, of all of that to actually be lived out correctly.
Yeah. And so within the function stack, the top four of the function stack that I just described, going back to what I was saying earlier, they're not rigidly defined.
Okay.
And so the way in which you can utilize those functions is different based on other aspects within the system, particularly the heart and the gut centers. And so it's not a definition of like, this is what you do, but it's going to be more of, this is going to be your tendency within the patterns that you're going to fall into. And it also gives a way to move forward. You know, so if you fall into this category of, you know, cognitive type, you can potentially move forward using these functions. You know, so you can go from primarily using your first function to adding in your second function, then integrating your third function, then integrating your fourth function. And a long ways down the road, you can get into fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, but it gives a roadmap and a way forward of what to be thinking about and what you can be putting effort and focus into.
Sure.
And so, like I said earlier, it's not necessarily about defining the person, defining the type. You are giving essentially a roadmap to someone who is trying to figure out how to move forward within who they are and how their mind is wired.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think if I have anything else for that, but maybe that's it for now.
Okay.
So that's head center. Maybe we can move into
one of three.
Yeah. Maybe we'll move into gut center for a bit.
Okay. So that's the top of the triangle.
Yep. So gut center, I use the Enneagram. Within the Enneagram, there are three centers, which is where I got, I think, the idea from. Similar, just the same as within my greater system, there is head, heart, and gut arranged in a similar way. There's a couple different ways of graphically representing this, but most people are going to be familiar with it in the form of a circle. And so each of the three centers are an arc of the circle, and they are oriented in the same way that the circles within on my triangle, they're oriented in the same positions. So mm-hmm. gut at the top, head on the left, heart on the right. Within each of the three centers on the Enneagram, there are three primary types. And so you have 8, 9, and 1 are gut types at the top. 9 is centered. And if anybody listening wants to look up a graphic on this, they're all over the place. But 8, 9, and 1 are centered at the top, or 9 is centered at the top, 1 and 8 on the other side. Moving down to the right, you have 2, 3, and 4. And then there's a gap, an intentional gap. And then there's 5, 6, and 7. And 5, 6, and 7 being the head types. Joel's shaking his head at me and laughing.
Oh, because I am a 4-wing 5, but you say I don't exist. So you just erased me as a person.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of whether to get into the purpose of that gap or not.
We'll come. So we're going to do an episode where Nathan sort of runs this down with a couple of us to kind of, because this is all very ethereal, listening to all these different terms. If you're not looking at it, depending on what kind of thinker you are, you can kind of get lost. So mm-hmm. we're going to do this with a couple people where I think that gap is going to be very important to both of our types. And yep. so I think we get into it deeply there. If you want to mm-hmm. give kind of a brief overview here, cool. But you'll have plenty of time to get into that gap later.
Okay. I'll address it quick. I'm not sure what future episodes will look like as far as, you know, assessment and talking about the types and things like that goes. So I'll just address it real quick here, and then we'll see how it goes in the future. The gap is there very intentionally because there is a disconnection between head and heart. The gut center is the center of, and particularly type 9 is the center of connection, maybe. I'm trying to think if there's a better word for it, but I can't think of one at the moment. But type 9 is essentially the type that connects the other types together through a drawing upward to itself.
Okay.
And so the disconnect between head and heart is there because the one has a difficult time crossing over to the other. When we talk later about the lines of connection, there's no direct lines of connection from or between types 4 and 5. And so there's this split there of, for someone who is either one of those types primarily, they're going to have more of a difficult time connecting to the opposite center. So that's the point of the gap. So you have the 9 primary types, and each of those types is split up into subtypes. The 3 subtypes are either a focus on self-preservation, so the subtypes are the self-preservation subtype, the sexual subtype, and the social subtype. The self-preservation subtype is focused on self and the preservation of self. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everyone has all 3 of these subtypes, but they're just prioritized in a particular order. As mm-hmm. with the primary types as well, within my use of the system, everyone has all 9, but we prioritize them. It's a little bit more complicated within the Enneagram. It's not a stack like with cognitive functions, but we'll get into that later. And right. so So the subtypes, everyone has all three, and we prioritize them in a certain order. And so someone who prioritizes self-preservation first, it's going to be focused on their own personal needs and making sure that their own personal needs are met first. Someone who prioritizes the sexual subtype is going to focus on, a lot of people say that it's, there's another name for it called a one-to-one subtype. And I don't know that that's necessarily how I view it. I tend to view it more as one's relation to the outside, anything external. And so it's more focused on, it is focused on like one-to-one relationships, but it's also focused on the individual's relation to a group or, you know, an organization or something like that. Who am, you know, it's somewhere halfway in between self-pres and social of who am I within this group, you know, okay, as an individual within this group. Whereas the social subtype is going to be more focused on the group itself, and someone who uses or prioritizes the social subtype first will actually tend to view themselves as being part of the group, in my experience, and not an individual within the group. You know, so they take on sort of a group identity. So those are the subtypes within that. And there's a, boy, there's a lot that we could talk about there, because that's the system I know the most about. But that's a general overview of the Enneagram as a system.
Yeah, I think in the future we'll get into more specifics. I think for now, broad overview of why you have the three, and then what do you view as unique about how you want to use them?
I think that the three are useful because people prioritize them in a certain order. And so you have some people who will approach one of the systems and say, this doesn't really work for me, you know, and chances, in my experience, chances are pretty good that they will say that about a system that they're not particularly attuned to, you know? Okay. And so I would say that that's low on their prioritization. And so in order to have a system that can address, you know, I don't want to say everyone, because I don't know that this is going to work for everyone, but in order to have a system that is as whole as I can perceive of, I want to have, I hesitate taking credit for it because none of this has really been mine, but I think that the benefit of having all three is giving people from different perspectives, a term that you use, Joel, as a seat at the table.
Yeah.
You know, like it gives their perspective validity and voice and gives them a way to play in the game without having to play someone else's game.
Yeah, I think general culture right now, a lot of tribalism, a lot of echo chambers, church organizations I've been in, restaurants I've worked at, you know, I don't think it matters where you are. Mm-hmm. We all have a tendency to want things to look like us. And if we're a leader, we want to knock off sort of the rough edges other people have. Mm-hmm. And that rough edge might just be that they react to something differently than we would have, or they view things the way we wouldn't. And so they're a dissenting voice and we have to get rid of that. Where I think your system is trying to pull everyone towards the center and basically say, we can learn how to work together and create a more perfect union, basically.
Yep.
And move forward in a way where iron is sharpening iron. You're teaching me something about me I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching you something about you. And when you offend me, when you bother me because you think that way, one of the things you talk about a lot is, well, that means I need to look inward. Mm-hmm. I don't need to look outward about why they're wrong. I need to look inward and figure out, why does them thinking that way injure me? Why does that hurt me or harm me? Mm-hmm. When if they have a valid opinion, how do I attack that? Can there be something different there?
Yeah. Yep. I have something I like to say is that all of your problems are your own fault.
They're all yours.
Mm-hmm. And so
it doesn't work with victim culture, but keep going.
No. Because I think that I'm of the belief that anytime we have issues with other people's image or thinking or actions, it is because either we have a limitation within our perception of what is and what purpose and usefulness their action serves. You know, it's either a limitation in our ability to perceive and understand, or it's a limitation within what we've already determined to be good or true or best or right or whatever term you want to use. You know, it's either a perceiving problem or it's a judging problem, to go back to the cognitive types. And so when you are having a problem, my approach with it, well, the approach that I take within my system is to ask first, why are you having that problem? Like, what is it? Identifying what it is that you're having a problem with, and then identifying why is it that you're having a problem with that. And from there, you can expand into, okay, well, the thing this person is doing is actually probably harmful and maybe we need to say something. Or the reaction can be, oh, I didn't realize this was a thing. You know, this is a realm of reality that I didn't even understand existed before now. Let me learn about that. And so it helps to inform your perceiving and your judgment moving forward from that point.
Yep.
And so I think that's a huge benefit of utilizing all three systems as a whole system. And I think that conveys a lot of benefit in understanding and moving forward.
Yeah, you've basically taken the most positive parts of all of them and pulled them into the middle, and with that have shielded the weaknesses, but also in the weaknesses have defined more what a whole perspective is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
at least I've tried to, you know.
Yeah. And it's, listen, nothing's perfect. We're all finite beings with the fingerprints of the infinite on us. We're all going to think we can reach the skies and be God on our own. And we can't. But I think built into your system is a mechanism to realize that.
Yep.
Instead of becoming better for our own sake, we're becoming better for God's sake.
And maybe even just becoming better to be more of who we were made to be.
Yeah.
And at that point, everyone benefits. You know, it is for the benefit of ourselves and others and for the glory of God, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's a really interesting, because I'm so immersed in the system, it constantly assessing and referring back to it is something that I do naturally at this point. And what you were talking about was a really interesting perspective from the Enneagram. There's a line of connection between type 7 and type 1. And at type 7, so there's a couple levels to the Enneagram. There's the personality level, which is what a lot of people tend to focus on and utilize the most. But there are also other levels to it. And one of them that I've heard referred to as, you know, the spiritual level, dimension, whatever it is, there are a set of more or less established teachings or perspectives is maybe a better term for each of the types that address why the type is disconnected or the ways in which the type is disconnected from reality.
Yeah.
And type 7 is disconnected in a way that they don't realize, and all these disconnections happen out of unconsciousness to them. And so for someone who uses a type primarily, they're not going to realize that they're doing this until they do the work of recognizing that within themselves, because they're one of their blind spots.
It's the log and the spec.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so type 7 is disconnected in that the type wants to have connection to the greater plan of the universe, but they feel as though, or the type feels as though they need to do something in order to be connected in it, when in reality, you're just in it, you know? And the point is not to act in a disharmonious way with it. And often because of our limitations in perception, type 7 will act in ways that are discordant and actually cause harm. And part of the work of type 7 is learning to relax into, there is a plan, everything is okay, you just have to do what you need to do, and it'll be all right.
Let go and let God.
Yeah, essentially. And then it's interesting because there's a line of connection between type 7 and type 1. And type 1 is disconnected in the sense that they want things to work out the right way. They want things to be right. And so type 1 will often take action because the Enneagram is part of the gut center. And type 1 is within the gut center in the Enneagram. Type 1 will often take action to make things right in their eyes. And the work there is to learn to relax into the understanding that things are going to happen the way that they need to happen. Mm. You know, things are going to be right, even if you don't perceive them to be right in the moment, because type 7, there is a plan and things are happening the way they need to happen.
This is Locke and Jack and Lost.
Huh?
John Locke and Jack Shepard and Lost. This is their battle. Everything happens for a reason. Does it, John?
Yeah. Okay. But it's that connection between the two of there's a lot of dynamicism within the Enneagram. There's a lot of movement that happens, but there's that connection of everything is as it needs to be, and everything's going to happen how it needs to happen. And learning to relax into that, it, from the type ones and type sevens that I've talked to, is a really difficult thing for them.
Sure.
And so, as is, you know, all the other types learning to reconnect with the things that they're disconnected from.
Yeah.
So, but what you just described was a really interesting, that really interesting line of connection between those two. If anybody remembers what it is that you said, which I do not.
We bounce, don't worry. So I'm fun to be involved in this because I've always sort of viewed the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs as not just imperfect tools, but often oddities of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because anyone I talk to that has looked into any of these to some degree always says something different about what type I am or what they view as how they should be used and all these things. Part of what's excited me about the way you view these systems as they are perception-based and it's about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people will use these as an excuse like, oh, you know what? I'm a type six, you know, just getting out of bed. You know, that's just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Just sorry I hurt you, but up just a type six.
Yep.
And, you know, the types I've been told I am have been very different.
Mm.
And it's often been based on what position I've been put in places or what the type the other people are. So they bring certain expectations to the table and.
Yep.
And all these things. So, you know, your take on, well, this isn't a perfect system. It's only useful to the point where it's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And you're obviously better at it than I am. But I think anything
I put a little more time in it into it than you have.
Yeah, it's aggressive. If you want to talk about the gospel from over the 2000 years, we can talk about that, but it's mm-hmm. been my fun. Yeah, but it is, I don't know. The thing I've always appreciated about you is it always is growing and changing and evolving. Mm-hmm. And there isn't a notion that this is the right way and this is how it has to be. And not even that, hey, this is for everyone. It's everyone's going to need this. It's, hey, where this is good, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something else for someone where this isn't the right thing. That's not often found among people who have put this much work into something and are pushing towards something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if a small part of it is useful to someone, then I consider it to be a success. And I think that part of my approach too is that if the shotgun blast is wide enough, then I can help enough people at least a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And so I don't know if this may end up being too personal, but can I just ask how it's changed how you look at things going through the system and running things through? Are there things in your life where you can go, oh yeah, like if it wasn't for looking at things this way, I don't know that I would have recognized that or been able to address that.
Mm-hmm. I think I have a couple thoughts there. First, I'll say that I use extroverted sensing in my top four cognitive functions. And so I don't really remember what my past experiences have been like. Whenever people ask me about this process and what I've been through and what it's been like, I'm like, I don't really know because I don't put a whole lot of effort into remembering that. I'm more focused on perceiving where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
As far as the sensory goes. And so that's a difficult question for me to answer because I don't really remember and I haven't kept any record of it. Journaling, my whole life, people have been like, well, just write a journal. I'm like, about what?
Like, it's just not valuable to do that when that's your...
Uh-huh. Well, and...
I'm not going to care what I feel like in the future if I don't care what I feel like now in it. What's the point?
Mm-hmm. Well, and my focus is not so much on like what the process has been to get here. It's on where am I at right now? Because I tend to prioritize interacting in the present, the past doesn't really matter. Like the past has obviously influenced me and it's been the process to get me where I am now, but it's in the past and I'm here in the present.
Right.
And so I think that people who use introverted sensing in their top four functions, they are much more attuned to the past experiences and how that informs the present. Whereas that's not my gift. That's not something that I'm particularly good at. And so I think so that's my thoughts there of like, that's a really difficult question for me to answer.
Sure.
As far as things that this has potentially helped me with, I think the big thing for me, largely a part of my type and where I fall within the system has helped me a lot in understanding who I am and what my gifts are and what my gifts are not. I don't know if this is a universal thing. I don't know if this is a thing for people who fall within a certain type grouping within my system or whatever, but I have the tendency to you know, that I can do anything that comes along, anything that needs to be done, like I can just do it. But the reality is that I can't, and that a lot of it I'm not particularly suited for. And so something that this has helped me with is defining what the things are that I'm good at and learning about what that looks like for me and how that expresses within me and how to utilize those strengths for whatever it is that I'm currently working on. And as I'm saying this, I'm recognizing the language that's coming out of my mouth as particularly like TE. And
you want to say what that is, though? Because we haven't gotten into the shorthand. So you just threw a shorthand right. When we haven't defined.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So within the cognitive functions, the shorthand is defined by the first letter of the function, followed by either an I or an E for introverted or extroverted. So thinking and feeling are T and F. Sensing is S and intuition is N, because if you used I, you would have I, and that doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well.
I, Cap'n.
Yep. And so TE is extroverted thinking, and it's very much focused on, because it's extroverted, it's focused a lot on resources and resource management. And so I've been talking a lot about how I can utilize this tool to achieve a goal. And so it's very extroverted thinking in its approach.
Yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's my thing.
You can, right.
That's my gifting. That's what I'm good at. And so that, right. Like I was saying, like this is something this has helped define is what I am good at and what gifts I have to bring to the table and how they can be integrated and accepted into what other people are doing.
Yeah. And that's sort of my goal with this Without Reform channel has been to get the friends of mine where we can speak a common language, but we all view things very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Or we all have different giftings, or we all have, you know, something unique we bring to the table, but we've done enough work together where we can still get somewhere cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yep.
I don't know. We'll get somewhere cool. It'll be great.
Yep. One step at a time. Whatever that
looks
like.
One step at a time. So you've alluded to some things about where you want to go. What is your ultimate goal with this system? What do you want to launch it as? What do you want to small scale, large scale? What's next for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you and I have had conversations about this before, but I think that the way that I see myself moving forward currently, there's a couple things that I'm working on tackling. One of them is working on completing the system, because it's only, I would say it's, based on my current perception, it's only at like 60%, maybe okay. A little bit more. So working on continuing my study and understanding of particularly the heart center and astrological typology, that's something that I'm working on pursuing right now. that's kind of the first thing for me from there. Okay. Ideally, so there's a vision in my mind of having a place like a retreat center or, you know, a camp or something of like that, where people can come and spend time and basically be immersed in the system and have the experiences of learning to use the tool, and hopefully through that, you know, reconnecting to themselves and basically maybe even rebuilding understanding in some ways.
Yeah.
But reconnecting in that way and having a space to be able to do that in my mind is the ideal. I don't know what's going to happen. At this point, I have goals of what I'd like to do, but I also am not attached to them.
Okay.
And so at this point, because all of this has really not been my plan and not my idea, I'm type seven, trusting that there is a plan and letting go of control as to what happens and learning and also allowing whatever's going to happen, all the while doing my own part for what I need to do. Like I said, I have these visions and ideas and hopes and dreams and plans and stuff. And I also kind of don't care if they happen, and choosing to trust that whatever does happen is going to be what's best.
Yeah.
Moving forward for me right now is one day at a time. I got a list of things to do that's longer than I want it to be, and just tackling things however I'm currently prioritizing them.
Off in the ethos, little cosmos adventurer you.
Yeah. Whatever that means.
Yeah, I don't know, who's to say even really.
Yep.
Language, mm-hmm. It's a weak vessel. Mm-hmm. And we use it. Here we are.
Yep.
Here we are. Cool. Got anything else you want to throw in here?
I think that might be it for now, actually. I think that was a pretty good overview and an introduction, and we can get into more of the details later.
Yeah, I think we got it out. I think I don't know, I at least hope people are excited about finding out more and digging in deeper. I mean, you and I have had several conversations surrounding this stuff until 2, 3 a.m. or whatever. Just like, we should go to bed. Should we? No, we should go to bed.
But when my mind is buzzing like that, there's no way I'm going to be able to sleep until I get out what I
Right.
need.
We need whiteboards. We need to bring whiteboards along. One of those 10 by 6 foot ones or whatever. It'll be good. Yeah, man. I'm super excited. Thanks for coming along, playing along in the journey.
Yeah, thanks for having
I
me.
know last time you said, I don't really know why I'm here. What we talked about is why you're here.
I still don't know why I'm here, just to be clear. I still don't know what I'm doing. I learned some things and I'm just throwing out ideas, so.
Yeah, we're all going somewhere. I got a master plan. It's fine. I'm happening to the universe. The universe is not happening to me.
Yeah, that freaks me out a little bit, but okay.
It's going to be fine. It's going to all turn out in the end. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. Goodbye.